We have been exploring together, doing life with God. I'm going to take a nap while they wake up. We've been doing this every week for the last several weeks. Now, come on. Doing life with God. Is there anyone who has loving like Jesus mastered? So I guess we need to keep learning about doing life with God. This morning, I want to start with a word association. So clear your mind of every thought. Some of you were already there. Clear your minds. Are you prepared? What is the first thing that pops into your mind when you hear the word wilderness? What is it that something popped into your head? I can tell. What is it? You want to share? Okay. Anybody want to share what popped into their head when I mentioned the word wilderness? What?
Beauty.
Beauty? Okay. You must be thinking of a particular wilderness. In general. Anyone else? Cold? Yeah. Anything else? Trees? Alaska. Yes. Every once in a while I watch that Coast Guard in Alaska and just marvel at the wilderness when they show the pictures of all the open space up there. It's just amazing. Anything else come to mind? Animals. Yes. Some you want to see, some you don't want to see. Anything? She was pointing at Bill when she said animals, so I wasn't sure what that. Bigfoot. Well, this is not a psychology test, but if it were, no, we won't go there. As you read through the Bible, you'll notice that wilderness is a common element to doing life with God, journeying with Him. And you'll notice that some of God's most important servants, guys like Moses, David, Elijah, and even Jesus, spent a lot of time in the wilderness. So why is it important, and what role does being in the wilderness serve for the Israelites who have to spend 40 years in the desert? We read about this portion of their journey with God in the book of Exodus. Go ahead and turn to Exodus chapter 15. And have that ready to look at. Grab your Bible or grab a pew Bible and turn to Exodus chapter 15. If I had to describe Exodus in just one word, the major theme of the book of Exodus is liberation. Exodus is about how God intervenes to liberate us from the things that enslave us. Now you're familiar with the story, and because you're familiar, don't check out, don't leave early. As long as your body's here, your mind ought to be here with us as well. But you're familiar with the story. The Israelites are in Egypt as a result of God taking Joseph down there. And they have grown to such numbers that the current Pharaoh is concerned that there might be a riot and that they would take over Egypt. And so he makes their life increasingly difficult and even passes an edict that all male Israelite babies will be killed at birth. You know that Moses' mother could not bring herself to do this, and so she hides him and nurses him for a while and then puts him in a basket, sends him down the river just when Pharaoh's daughter is out in the river bathing, and she receives him as a gift from God, and he's raised in the house of Pharaoh, and then he intervenes with when there's a conflict between an Egyptian and an Israelite. And he strikes the Egyptian and kills him, so he runs for his life. And they have this increasingly horrible existence, and they cry out to God. And Exodus 3 says that God heard their cries and was going to send a rescuer. And so God sends Moses, who had been 40 years tending sheep. So he is 80. Remember a few weeks ago I said, if you're not dead, you're not done. God has something for you. Even if you're 80, God has something for you to do. and God sends Moses back with Aaron, and God uses Moses and puts on display his power by confronting, well, he sends 10 plagues against Egypt, but they happen to be plagues that are directly in conflict to the many false gods that the Egyptians believed in, the frog god and all these. And so he displays his power. Pharaoh finally gets fed up and releases them. And Moses leads the people out. They get stuck at the Red Sea. The Pharaoh and his army are coming after them. It's a great climax, and the people are crying, "Why did you bring us out here to die?" And then God parts the Red Sea. They pass through it. When Pharaoh and his men come through, the water comes crashing down. And so they rejoice, and they travel on with God. Now look with me. Let's pick up the story at Exodus chapter 15, verse 22. Exodus 15, 22. Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the desert of Shur. For 3 days they traveled in the desert without finding water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink its water because it was bitter. That is why the place is called Marah. So the people grumbled against Moses, saying, "What are we to drink?" Then Moses cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a piece of wood. He threw it into the water, and the water became sweet. There the Lord made a decree and a law for them, and there he tested them. He said, "If you listen carefully to the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his eyes, if you pay attention to his commands and keep all his decrees, I will not bring on you any of the diseases I brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you." Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs and 70 palm trees, and they camped near the water. Bless you. Now, we don't have time this morning to read the rest of this passage, but if you kept reading all the way through chapter 17, verse 7, you would notice that this is one unit with three stories that combine two things that are seemingly incompatible, seemingly contradictory. They don't belong together, and yet here they are tied together. The two things that shouldn't be together but are together are God's graciousness and Israel's grumbling. God's mighty acts of power and Israel's unbelievably persistent doubt. It's really mind-boggling. They complain about being thirsty and God provides them water. Then they complain about being hungry and God provides manna in the form of flakes to be collected off the ground in the morning. And then they get to a new location where there's still some water lacking and they're thirsty, so they cry out again and grumble. But here's what's amazing. In Exodus 17, verse 7, here's what it says. Moses called the place Massah and Meribah because the Israelites quarreled and because they tested the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" Can you believe that? Now stop and think about everything that they have experienced at the hand of God. The 10 plagues, the deliverance from Egypt, being led through the Red Sea, being given water, being given food that they could collect every morning. And after all of that, they're still grumbling and complaining. But the way that they do it is just mind-boggling. Now, here's what they should have said. "You know, God, you feed us from the hand of Pharaoh. You freed us from the hand of Pharaoh. You parted the waters of the sea so we could walk through. You made the waters of Marah sweet so we could drink. You provided flakes in the morning called manna so we could eat. Now we're in Rephidim, and we're thirsty. So, God, could you please give us water to drink?" That's what they should have said. Doesn't that sound much more respectful? And yet, their reply is God even here? I mean, it sort of sounds like the kind of taunting you would hear in a junior high gym locker. "What, are you a man?" And you're thinking, are you serious? After everything that God has already done for you? Still they disbelieve. Still they rebel, they doubt, they sin. God's graciousness and Israel's grumbling. They don't belong together, but the writer of Exodus puts them together to show us something about the human heart and the human condition. He puts those things together to show us, even though Israel was out of slavery, they were still slaves. You catch that? Even though they were out of slavery, they were still slaves. They were immediately freed the moment that they were out of Egypt. but they were slaves to their circumstances. They were slaves to their appetites and their desires. They were slaves to their worries and fears. They still had the mindset of slavery, and that's why God had to lead them in the desert for 40 years. Despite all the displays of God's power, Israel still had not learned that even though they were in the desert with no food and water, God was above their circumstances. They had to learn to trust God above all else, and God knew where they were going was not as important as who they were becoming. Now I'm going to read that again. Don't miss this. They had to learn to trust God above all else, and God knew where they were going was not as important as who they were becoming. Those of you who have traveled long enough in life and are middle-aged, you get that, don't you? When we're young, it's so much about where we're headed, what we're going to do. And then as we get older in life, we realize, no, it's really about who we are. And that is especially important to God. God knew having a land flowing with milk and honey was not as important as having a heart flowing with faith and courage and love. That's why God leads them into the desert, because it's one of the best places to learn and to grow and to get liberated from the things that enslave us. If you're not sure what it is that you're dependent on a daily basis, then come with us when we go spend 5 days in West Virginia and camp in tents and cook around an open fire. No phone. You have to walk to get to a bathroom that works. There's a porta john, but most of us walk a little ways to get to a bathroom. No internet, unless you walk down to the lodge. When you all of a sudden are out in the wilderness and exposed to the elements, or you're out in the river in the middle of the rapids, or you're in one of the caves, and there's no way to get out, you have to follow and be a part of what's going on, all of a sudden you realize those things you wish you had, you live with on a daily basis, and all of a sudden you understand how important they are. Or maybe you get the word, as we were talking about in Sunday school class this morning. You know, I said, when are times when you look back and realize you were really stretched to trust God? And Rob said, both times that I got called to head, got called up by the Army to be a part, and said, had no idea where I was going, what I was going to do, when I would leave. Did a lot of talking to God right then. Those are the times when God reveals to us what it is that we're trusting in other than Him. And the reality is, you will never know God is all you need until God is all you have. Do you hear that? You will never know God is all you need until God is all you have. As long as you have God and something else to rely on, you're going to rely on that something else. Now, I don't know about you, but I read this, and it's hard not to be a little judgmental. It's like, how could they be so blind? How could they be so stupid? They're morons. Now, you're thinking, that's kind of judgmental, but don't you kind of feel that way? I mean, when you look at everything that they've done, you're thinking, holy cow, how in the world could they miss that? But I believe that the writer of Exodus, the one who's telling us this narrative, wants us to understand that, and this guy Kevin Kim puts it this way. He wants us to see what they're doing and to kind of criticize them, because it's sort of, he says it's sort of like walking into a room and you notice a painting on the other side of the room on a wall, and your first thought is, oh, that's not very appealing, it's kind of ugly. And then as you walk closer, you realize it's not a painting, it's a mirror. That's a little startling. But the writer of Exodus wants us to feel that kind of criticism towards the Israelites, so that the narrative can point back at us and say, are we really doing a whole lot better? Are we really doing any better than the Israelites in terms of thanking God and being grateful for all that He has provided? When we complain and we grumble, essentially we're saying this: yes, God, I know I'm made in Your image, and You love me, and You call me Your own. Yes, because of Jesus, I've been freed from sin and death, and I'm forgiven, adopted, and redeemed, so I will be with You for all eternity. Yes, I'm a part of this community of believers where I'm loved and known, and where I can know and love, and where I can experience this grace and truth and power. Yes, I've been given the Holy Spirit and given gifts so I can contribute and participate in this cosmic story that is Your story. But if only I had a bigger house, a a newer car, a better job, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, an understanding spouse. If only I had, fill in the blank, then I'd truly be happy. Then I'd really be grateful. Then I'd be content. Who do you suppose is more content? The man with $1 million or the man with 6 children? The man with 6 children, because he didn't want any more. Had you, didn't I? Not that I don't love and appreciate all 6 of my children and grateful for each one of them. Did I say that well? Are we okay, Mikhail? Do you believe me? All right, good. But we do that. It's amazing how God provides for all of us in a million ways that are sometimes obvious and sometimes not so obvious. It's simply amazing, but do you know what's even more amazing? How we forget. Despite how God is continuously sustaining us and giving us gifts of grace and how he is faithful to us, we forget. And we murmur and we complain and we grumble because the moment we're in is not exactly what we want it to be. The story of Exodus is a beautiful story of salvation and liberation and deliverance. God hears the cry of his people who are enslaved. He raises up a deliverer to free them from their oppressor. God takes them through the wilderness to teach them to trust him above their circumstances, and he is with them. He provides for them, and he gives them bread, and he gives them water, and he sustains their lives to show them he brings life even into dead, barren places. He leads them out of the wilderness into the promised land. It is a great story of deliverance, but it points to a greater story. Because one day God would raise up another deliverer, a greater Moses, someone who left a palace much greater than Pharaoh's, someone who came to his own just like Moses did with Pharaoh and was rejected by his own, someone who also provided bread in the desert. Remember when Jesus multiplied the loaves of bread to feed a huge crowd and afterward in John 6 said, "I am the bread of life, came from heaven." In other words, I am the manna. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry again. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. Jesus is our manna. Jesus is our sustenance. Jesus is our provision. He's the one who gives us life in dead places, and he's the reminder of God's mercy and power and faithfulness. He is our daily bread. Sometime today or tomorrow, I want you to take a sticky note, and I want you to write manna on it, and put the sticky note on your mirror or your dashboard or your computer, someplace where you'll see it. And then this week, when you start to grumble, when you start to be frustrated with circumstances not being exactly the way you want them to, I want you to see that note, and I want you to pause and just say manna. Say it out loud, manna. Speak the word, and then be reminded in that moment that God is with you, God is for you, God will take care of you, God is watching over you at that moment. God is forming you and leading you in every season of life, that he is enough no matter what circumstances you might be facing. God is not nearly as concerned about where we are going as he is about who we are becoming. And who we are becoming is directly dependent upon learning that we can trust him to be above even the worst of circumstances, no matter what it is. See, that was the very issue that got Adam and Eve in trouble in the first place. They didn't think they could trust God. What do you think is our core struggle for as long as we're on this earth? Can I really trust God? It's going to come at us in a million different ways. The longer you live, the older you get, you'll experience it coming at you in ways that you didn't even think were possible, you didn't even know existed. And it will be one more wilderness moment when God will give you the opportunity to learn that he can be trusted above everything and everyone else, to learn that God is enough. What is it that you're facing health issues, age issues, possibility of losing someone, family not being home for the holidays, whatever it is, God is enough if we'll let Him be. Father, thank You for Your patience, for Your faithfulness, even when we grumble and complain and ignore the million times when You demonstrate Your faithfulness to us. May Your Spirit awaken in us a sense of awe and wonder at who You are. And may we learn to live with grateful hearts for all that You have provided. The very breath that we have is a gift from You. May we be mindful of that. We ask in Jesus' name.